Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, college football fans across the nation and around the world. This is Tim May with the Tim May Show with my able-bodied co-pilot. I let him fly the plane most of the time. I'm an aging veteran pilot. This guy's a young whippersnapper who could even land a 747. No, a Airbus 380 on an aircraft carrier, third wire. Matt Wilhelm, welcome once again to the Tim May Show, my man.
Great to be with you, Tim, as always. And again, maybe not celebrating a Buckeye victory, but a lot to discuss coming out of that matchup with Nebraska.
Okay, before we get to the nitty gritty, not just even the dissection of what happened against Nebraska, but also the precursor of what's coming against Penn State, because, you know, middle of the week, people want to hear as much about that as they do anything else. But that sets up the questions, right? But dude, this has been a strange college football season. I think you agree with me. Like I keep pointing out, Georgia should have gotten beat, should have been beaten by Kentucky. Kentucky
yes.
Blew it. Then whips Alabama, or excuse me, comes back on Alabama after Alabama took a huge lead, but gets beat. Then gave up 31 points to Mississippi State. Then made Texas look like what you thought Mississippi State would look at.
Yeah.
That's just one of the teams in the top four right now. Did Ohio State, in your opinion, did it just have that, headed into another battle of unbeatens, Ohio State at Penn State in Happy Valley. And thank goodness, I think for Ohio State's point of view, the game starts at noon and not 8 p.m. whiteout. But did Ohio State just have that one game that almost every team has every year that you just can't really explain, except, wow, that team had your number, but you were still able to win. What's your take on coming out of the Nebraska game?
Sure. It's the one thing coming out of Nebraska, and then also, you know, as this is, you know, midweek, looking forward to Penn State, is I think you're going to see a similar team from a toughness standpoint, centered around defense. Just like Nebraska has been, you're going to see now which quarterback will we see? Will it be Drew Aller or will it be the backup, who's a little bit more of a run happy kid? But you're going to see potentially a younger quarterback like the Raiola kid, who may be as much of a threat running the football as he is throwing it. And we saw, right, you know, that show up in our football game multiple times against Nebraska. It's tough, you know, a team and a coach constructing a plan to manage a now second open date, you know, after such a tough loss. And, you know, as you and I were talking before we jumped on, it was, you know, a couple of days to evaluate, get over, fix what happened, you know, emotionally, mentally, and physically, what happened out there in Oregon to the number one team in the country, right? And we saw ourselves not fall too far in the polls because of the way in which that game went down. And you look at what Nebraska had happened to them, you know, 56-7, an extremely embarrassing loss for that football team, for Matt Rhule, especially given the rebuild trajectory they were on to be competitive against very good teams. And we saw Indiana, who is now, you know, I think ranked in the top 12, a very good football team and continues to be undefeated, has not trailed 1 second in the college football season, by the way. So it was a funky game setup. I wouldn't consider it a trap game, but I think it's like it's just a game that you have to remember, like, these are young men who are managing, you know, some type of scholastic workload, while also emotionally coming over the loss to Oregon. I'm sure because of the current college football landscape, they're managing their NIL opportunities that they have to get out to. And in some cases, when you get a little far from playing a football game, it takes a little while for you to crank it back up. And I thought Nebraska, I watched Ryan Day's postgame press conference. I watched Matt Rhule's postgame press conference. And Matt Rhule was just, again, talking about how proud he was of his guys, talking about, you know, coming out of the Indiana game and what that week of work was for them. And I think at the juncture of taking the lead, you know, in Columbus, Ohio, in the Horseshoe, and going up on the number two, number three, number four team in the country and holding that lead, and what it meant, you know, kind of like in a vacuum for Nebraska football, was when we do it and we fight and we play great defense, you know, even with a freshman quarterback, we can compete with anyone. So there was some validation there for them. And so that's them righting some wrongs in a week.
Yeah.
And us, you know, kind of just maybe like resting on our laurels to a certain extent and coming out of a very close victory. And we expect, and this is what us as fans call it, writers, members of the media, in some cases the players, because I'm sure they're all on social media. They see it too. We're Ohio State. We're supposed to win that game. We're supposed to blow them out. The line was, you know, what, 20, 28 and a half, 21 and a half. I don't know what it was.
It was 25 or 26, but
yeah, you're supposed to do it by all accounts. And there's definitely some shock for it being 21-17. But I think more so, which I'm sure we're going to get to here in the next 20, 30 minutes, is, you know, some of the small little things that happen in a game of why it ended up being a closer game than it actually was, that probably should have been.
You know, I'm going to have Jacoby Boren on here in a minute. He was the center on the 2014 National Championship team. He's going to give us some insight, you know, because basically they had their big reunion last week, but the bottom line is they're going to Ohio State's going to Penn State, and that game at Penn State 2014 is where that team, that Ohio State team, found its mojo. It was a close finish. What was it, double overtime or whatever? Ended with a shove sack by Joey Bosa.
Yes.
But the bottom line is we're going to get Jacoby Boren's take on that in a few minutes. But, you know, as I look at this, I wanted to ask you this, Matt. Let's play the old war games. I don't know if you ever saw that movie or the remake of it, but DEFCON 5 to DEFCON 1. You know, DEFCON 1 is where you're, I think, where you're feeling pretty good about things. And DEFCON 5 is where nuclear war is imminent. And by that, I mean, I'm just talking about from an emergency status standpoint. I wanted to run these at you and answer them as briefly or as long as you want to do it. But I want to run. I'm trying to be more organized, you know what I mean, in my latter years here or my latter podcast. But I wanted to run this by you. From a DEFCON 1 where you're feeling pretty good to a DEFCON 5, and I may have those reversed, but it doesn't really matter. Sure. We've already explained the way we're defining them. When I say offensive line, where would that light be? Would it be on 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 on the DEFCON scale?
I think
based on what you saw against Nebraska.
Well, what I saw against Nebraska, you know, emotionally, I'd want to go, we're probably at a 5. But that said, collectively, where we're at, because of a lot of things, and I'll be as brief as I can. We're Ohio State. You know, we got horses in the stables. You know, we're playing some guys who are playing for the first time. I think Coach Fry and Coach Day are shuffling guys around trying to find the, is it the best five or is it the best players at each position? So for this one, I'm going to dial it back just a bit because I think there is some kind of panic setting in because the big games will have better players than Nebraska has on the defensive line. And so I'm going to go 3, DEFCON 3 for the offensive line.
Yeah. And real quick, just in a nutshell, you know, Nebraska plays that 3-3-5 defense, which means nothing. It means that's what they call it in their head, but they always have 4, sometimes 5. Occasionally they had 6 guys at the line of scrimmage. It's from a matchup standpoint, as I pointed out on one of our LettermanRoad.com videos, I thought they had Seth McLaughlin and the offensive line had trouble figuring out even who the Mike linebacker was, you know, the old pivot point of a defense. I mean, it looked like confusion a lot on just who to block or, you know, what the set was. You know what I mean? Sure. Did you see that too as you watched the video of this game? Did you?
I mean,
I just saw guys coming free. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I did. And so that's, you know, a 3-3-5 probably from a week in, week out standpoint is predominantly not a front that you're going to see all that often. It's almost the equivalent to, you know, seeing, you know, playing Navy and having to see an option, you know, once a year. You have to be prepared for it. You have to master it. Then you have to forget it because you probably won't see it again.
Yeah.
But here's what's unique about the 3-3-5. And it's all based around your personnel, right? Is you need a dog at nose tackle, right? A guy who is likely going to line up in a 1 technique in 1A gap or the other, or a 0 head up over the center.
Yeah.
Right.
Or caught.
And, right. And then you're going to have your ends, you know, you're going to tinker with your ends alignment based around what the team likes to do schematically in the run game and the pass game. Well, and then in many cases, you're adding a backer. Right. But what's unique about it from where there may have been some confusion is what's great about a 3-down front if you can hold up in the run game, which we saw Nebraska do, is those linemen really aren't playing a gap. They're playing and stepping to the technique of the offensive line.
Yeah.
So if the guard or center steps with their, you know, I'll call it say, you know, my defensive left foot, I'm mirroring that with my left foot and pressing him back. And then I'm able to throw him, you know, now that his momentum is going that way, and rock back and play the cutback as well. So Nebraska and Matt Rhule and this, you know, defensive coordinator, they don't commit to the 3-3-5 just because it's like, oh, it's what we do and the players need to conform. They have the personnel, and I'm sure it's a little bit in flux as they're building this. They have the personnel to do it. So I think it gives them the best opportunity to be disruptive. It gives them the best ability to play the run up front. And it gives them the best opportunity to win football games and stay in football games again. So, and you keep the five, which keeps that kind of like umbrella from a coverage standpoint that still allows you to tinker with coverages.
Yeah.
You know, blitz guys out of the secondary if you need be. So it's a funky look. And I do think, you know, and I'll move on, you know, like the run game, their ability to be disruptive in the run
game. Wait a minute. Number two is the run game, and your DEFCON level is?
My DEFCON level for the run game is kind of probably going to coincide with the offensive line, and I'm going to stay three.
Three, yeah.
We have to run the football. Ohio State has to run the football to win a national championship. Ohio State has to run the football to beat Michigan. Ohio State has to run the football to beat Penn State.
Yeah.
Ohio State's going to have to run the football to beat Oregon potentially again if that opportunity exists, okay? That is a must. You don't have the running backs that you have who, again, as we've seen in years past, if you watch Ole Miss play and you watch Ohio State play the last 3 years, Trayvon Henderson needs to make one guy miss, you know. Now, we just need to block the down and maybe tag up to one backer, and then these guys are good enough to make that one guy miss. And then we've talked about that before, you know, 12 yards could be a 70 yard run simply by an angle or a shoestring tackle or stepping out of one or running away from a guy. These guys have that ability. But us not doing it forces Will Howard, you know, and this offensive line to have to protect. And because they're at a DEFCON 3, you know, that coincides with that's run game and pass game.
Yes.
And we saw it a little bit yesterday, you know, without Simmons at left tackle and now potentially another question mark, there's going to be a little bit of a reshuffle. And playing with guys in different places, it takes time to just, you know, develop a little rapport of what's going on, you know, with the guy next to you. And I would also say it coincides with the quarterback having confidence, being able to stand in there and confidently and not have to pull a quick trigger or a quick escape because you just don't trust the guys in front of you to protect you.
Yeah. Yeah. This is going to be an interesting week in the history of the Ohio State offensive line play. Especially if they slide Donovan Jackson out to left tackle, which is an option they could definitely use. And, you know, slide another guy like Austin Saraville back into the starting lineup, let's say at left guard. It's going to be an interesting week if Zen Mikalski, you know, Zen Mikalski, I understand, suffered some type of like hip injury. So that doesn't sound like it's something that goes away in a week, but developing that, you know, gelling, I guess is the term you'd like to use more than anything else, is what's going to challenge them. Because I thought the passing game saved them, was their salvation on against Nebraska, and could be their salvation at Penn State on Saturday. Where do you have the pass game in a DEFCON rating?
Pass game at a DEFCON rating.
One, you feel good. Five, you're bringing in troops, more troops.
Five, I'm gonna probably be at a one. I feel good. I'd say maybe a one and a half, only because
1.5.
You know, going 13 of 16. You know, you like the high percentage. I guess the way the game flow went, it didn't allow the opportunity to throw the ball a little bit more. But when you're that efficient, it's like, you know, slinging around the yard. My one concern. I mean, I love it. I love the big plays. I love, you know, the Carnell Tate touchdown. And I love the Jeremiah Smith touchdown. But if you take those out, right? And I know that, of course, they happened. Yes, they did. And we took our shots and we hit them. But let's just, and you know, so you're 11 of 14, and you probably only throw for about 115, 120 yards, right? Yeah. I know that's close to 10 yards of reception or a little bit more than 10 yards of reception, but I just think that, and again, it's part of the game plan. It's part of that scheme Nebraska, you know, came in with, was maybe, you know, limiting Ibuka, you know, on some of that intermediate stuff, the, you know, some of the bubble screens where we get on the ball very quickly. You know, he catches it at 2 yards and turns it into a first down. You know, some of the wheel stuff, some of the, you know, some of the stuff that we've hit with him, like the little hitches, the little zone windows that he hits,
yeah,
in past weeks were not available this week, and that's okay. But that's where, if those big plays don't hit, why we're at DEFCON 3 on run game and O-line is I'd love to just be able to turn around and hand the football off and go get those 4, 5, 6 yards, yeah, you know, and yeah, potentially pop one. And we just can't do that now. And as I said, Penn State's going to be a better defense than Nebraska. And here's the one thing that I've always said, Tim, you know, even going back in the past years when we've done this, is like, once you kind of put the template out, to not stop, correct, but limit, you know, you're going to see some version of that every week moving forward until you can overcome it. And that, you know, you're putting a lot on this, you know, reshuffled offensive line. And so it'll be interesting to see what these coaches do, you know, in now in 1 week, to have to overcome that and play a, you know, a 3-4 matchup on the road.
Yeah. I mean, it brought to mind, I mean, I thought Nebraska had a great defensive plan to basically, they had like a, like, let's say 2 yards on either end of the line. I'm talking about Ohio State's offensive line. And then 10 yards back, there was like a region there was no man's land. I mean, in other words, Ohio State got very little out of, yep, that region where, in fact, you, like you said, you know, they consider that a smorgasbord usually, and even in the passing game. And they didn't get guys to the second level running the football for the most part, like you just alleged. I mean, like you just talked about. And then passing game-wise, they also limited that. I mean, I thought it was a really – Tony White's their defense coordinator. I thought it was extremely –
well, Tim, that's what makes it. That's why we're like, again, I'm not saying I'm afraid, but that's where the concern comes. Is, yeah, you know, you would think that if the run game was hitting, and that intermediate was hitting, it would open up the big play.
Yes.
So I think that's a testament just to how talented we are at wide receiver, and we have a quarterback who can deliver the football, you know, almost in stride or only available to these great wide receivers.
Yeah. And
take those away, and where you want to live, which is running the football, moving the chains, you know. And I know that, you know, and hitting that intermediate, which then sets up those deep passes. It's like the deep, yeah, passes were available, and everything else was not.
Yeah.
Which is scary, you know. That if a very talented Penn State football team takes away, you know, makes it, you know, takes away the deep and forces you to run the football, you know, diligently and work the intermediate where they're going to, you know, study your pass concepts and your route combinations. And if they take those away too, then what, you know, that's where I want to see Chip Kelly and this offense really dig deep.
That's where Matt Rhule and his coaching staff are scratching their heads. Cause they literally played really great with the exception of two plays and one drive, really. And, you know, and like I said, they were so sold on taking that 10-yard area away that they let Ohio State get over the top on them twice. And, you know, and yeah, a guy slipped down, but he slipped down because he was trying to recover. And then Ohio State puts together a great drive for the win. I mean, so what would you – number four on my list is, what would you do more of offensively if you were Ohio State? Just in a nutshell, I mean, I personally believe with these receivers, you know, who's Carnell Tate? He's hardly caught a ball, right? You know,
right,
all year. And all of a sudden, he was huge. He scores a touchdown. He has the big catch that gets the winning touchdown drive going. If you remember, they totally forgot about him. So what would you do more, Matt, if you were in Chip Kelly's shoes or Chip Kelly's seat up in the press box? What would you do more of, just in a general sense?
Of course. Well, I mean, I think, you know, you have to be diligent to the run game, I think. And at this juncture in the football season, and I know that Ohio State fans, and we've all been enamored with, you know, having, what a luxury of having, you know, Quinshon Judkins and Travion Henderson.
Yeah.
At this juncture in the season, I would not, and I'm not trying to say one over the other because they're both so talented, I would give a little bit more to whoever's running hot in the football game. And I think we're trying to be too balanced, you know, with these two young men. And I know they've both finished with 10 carries, but it's always been like 13-9 and, you know, 12-8, you, yeah, know, in the past weeks as well. And I would just, well, first of all, I'll say like, A, I want to see more of one or the other, and then use the other one as a little bit of a changeup, kind of like the NFL style of football, if that makes sense, as opposed to being so balanced. That being said, I would love one of these young men to like pull themselves ahead and be the hot hand. Like you're not the hot hand for right now. You're the hot hand. Like you're just the dude that you have to get the football to, you know? And they've shown flashes of that, but the consistency hasn't been there. And I think the consistency of, you know, the offensive line may be something to do with that. I would also say like when you go with that one back, you might also see the efficiency of Will Howard running the football. I know, you know, inside the red zone, inside the 10-yard line, you know, down by the goal line, we've run him successfully in past weeks. His efficiency running the football probably go up if we weren't so balanced. But then I think lastly in the pass game, really quick, it's I just want to see the chess pieces moved around and just out scheme, out think, out create, as it seems like Chip Kelly did probably when he was back at Oregon, you know, revolutionizing football, right?
Yeah.
That is still a thing. And we see, you know, the Detroit Lions, you know, do it, you know, each and every week in the professional game. And we see, you know, other amazing offensive minds coming up with, you know, tinkering with scheme, tinkering with eye discipline from a defensive standpoint to pop guys free, not just flat out having better athletes doing more athletic things than the team we're playing.
Yeah. And we all know Chip Kelly's got that in him.
He does.
It's really interesting. You know, I wanted to jump in here real quick with Jacoby Bohr and just get his take on what a big game this is, number one. Number two, this is a guy that was the cornerstone of the offensive line. Kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, I'm not sure Urban Meyer didn't – I'm not running him off. It may not be the right term. But, you know, you never quite fit that bill physically of what you want on a big-time center just from a size standpoint. Yet he was one of the linchpins of a 2014 national championship run. Just get his take on what he's seen from Ohio State and catch up with him for a little bit. So let's get to my conversation with Jacoby Bohrin. Boy, Jacoby Bohrin, thanks for joining the Tim May Show, my man. It's been a long time coming. Been wanting to do this for a while, especially after I found out. What was that big award you won after, I think your senior year, the big award you won where you got some cash?
That was for the Campbell, finalist for the William V. Campbell.
Which Seth McLaughlin is a finalist
for. Yeah, I just saw that today, which is awesome to see. He's been having a great year.
Yeah, but what I liked about it was I understand, Zach told me, I think you used the money or the connection to get your pilot license.
I did. So it was a lot of fun. So I ended up getting my pilot's license after that. Didn't really have a whole lot of desire to do anything further education-wise from the MBA side, and always wanted to be a pilot. So got that, learned how to fly, and since then I've had three young kids and haven't really flown much. So I have to get back into the swing of things, but it was a great, great experience.
Yeah, I was going to say, I soloed when I was 16 years old. I was identifying with you. For one time, I could identify with a starting center at Ohio State.
Yeah.
But good for you. Excuse my voice. Jacoby, number one, I want to ask you about this Ohio State football team. What you've seen the last couple of weeks, the last couple of games, what is, I don't know, what has you concerned, I guess, about the offensive line play?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think it's been a challenge. I mean, I think, you've had some injuries in there, right? Which is never easy. I think typically in any college offensive line, you usually have 6-7 guys consistently every year that are there and ready to play. Just candidly, you know, I think the tough thing was coming off of that Oregon loss. You know, I think it's a challenging loss. One thing that I think shows also the character of the team of how they respond. So I think last week was definitely, a little bit lackluster, right, from what I would have liked to have seen, just from kind of the competitive edge, the toughness, and just really taking control of the game. So I think one of those items, right, that I think the team has to understand is we have two great running backs, right, and we have an offensive line that should be able to dominate the game, and we're just not doing it yet, Hopefully, right, we have some guys up there that'll step up, right, challenge each other. I mean, I think that's really when you look at a great line. It's not any one guy, right? It's a group of all five guys playing in sync. And I think the reality is when you have one guy that doesn't do their job, it's a dead play, right? Especially in the running game. And so, you know, I think what I'd like to see is just that physical edge, right? Coming out there, when it's third and one, fourth and one, there's no questions, right? The ball's going up the middle. You're going to get a yard, 2 yards, 3 yards. You know, and again, we haven't seen that. I'm not going to say, I'll say yet, because I do think we have the guys on there to do it. We just got to show it, right? And got to go play downhill, got to get mean, and go take control of the game.
It was funny because that was the y'all. You guys were there for the reunion of the 2014 national championship team. Around with having those guys around you, what got rekindled there from the standpoint of what you think made y'all special in 2014? And is there still? Excuse me.
Hang on. You're good.
No, all of a sudden I just my throat. I've had a cold and now I took my flu and. COVID shot at the same time the other day, like a dumbass. I'll cut all this out.
Yeah, hopefully you got a freaking dumbass freaking drinking water.
No, that's okay. Let's go back to you, though. What is you had that 2014 team, all you guys were around each other with Urban there and stuff. And did it rekindle some of the thoughts of what made y'all special that year in particular?
Yeah, it did, right? I mean, so at first, I mean, it was great to get the guys together, right? I mean, everyone has their own lives, right, and moves on. And so we honestly talked a lot about that, right? So Friday night specifically, you know, talking with Coach and the rest of the team, we got everyone together for dinner. And, you know, I think it's selflessness, you know? I think when you really look at that team, I would say selflessness, and then literally just overcoming adversity. I mean, there's so much adversity and very steep adversity when you look at losing Braxton, right? I mean, that was, we had a young team that year, right? So he was the leader of that team and the guy going into the season. Lose him, we got JT, who JT was unknown at that point. On top of that, we had a lot of really young, not a ton of returning starters on that team. You know, go in, really, you know, lackluster game against Navy, lose to Virginia Tech, you know, and so that's just early on. You know, you look at that, and I think what it came down to is that guys were selfless. I mean, everybody on that team, you look back, like, there wasn't anyone that would not be willing to do or sacrifice anything to win, right, and help that team out. And I think that's something that you saw throughout the season, a really young team and guys that were bought in, loved each other, right, and were willing to do anything at all costs to win a championship. And I think you're able to see that even when you look at guys like Cardell. I mean, again, you go freaking Michigan game, right, JT. I mean, I think one of the most, you know, the epitome of that season that a lot of people I don't think talk about is, like, JT, I mean, one of the toughest guys. I mean, it's odd for a quarterback, right, to be the toughest guy on the team.
Yeah.
You know, that Michigan game, I mean, he was there, and his ankle was, you know, turned the other way, snapped and everything else. He wanted to get back up, right? Like, he was like, hey, get me back up, let me get him. And it's like, oh, man, dude, you're done. You know, and I think that's just really, like, what it looked like on the team. The amount of guys that played banged up, injured, they didn't care because they were going to lay it all out there and make sure that they were in a position to help their team win a championship, and we were able to get it done.
Yeah. Cardale steps in there. Next thing you know, you guys are making history, first college football playoff championship team. What do you remember real quick that came together after JT went out, meaning that next week against Wisconsin? What's just that overarching thought, that or memory of what really came together there?
Yeah, so, you know, I think we talked about it all the time, right? And Coach Meyer harped on it, was there's next man up, right? It's not if your opportunity comes, it's when.
Yeah.
You know, so I think, listen, Cardell had a whole season. I would say camp probably wasn't thinking about that position right at that point. But, you know, all throughout the season, I mean, he was preparing and ready to take that opportunity when it came.
Yeah.
You know, so I think leading up to the Wisconsin game is going back to what we talked a little bit earlier, right, with the O-line play this year. I mean, we were looking at it, right? We had a really strong line. You know, we had a lot of guys. You know, we had Zeke out there, right, running the ball. Like, we were ready. It's like, hey, kind of the root of the top is that we got to take this and take control of the game, right? It's on us. I think one of the funniest things, right, and this is Cardell being a goofball, you know, is first drive, right? I think it's Devin Smith down the sideline, right, for whatever it was, 60-plus yard pass. You know, he just has this grin on his face, right, and just goofy, right? And we always had a back-and-forth banter, right? He looked at me and he goes, I'm the daddy, right, and just gives me that. And he has that, he had that charisma to him. And, you know, I think after that, it was kind of like, oh, man, like, yeah, I don't want to say we didn't think we could do it, but there was a little bit of like, all right, we're going to be a little one-dimensional with what is. And, you know, I'm not saying there wasn't confidence in Cardell. It was just an unknown, right, and very bizarre situation. And, you know, when you look at that, though, it was after the Wisconsin game, it's like, there's nobody in this country that we can't beat.
That's going to say.
And we were able to kind of carry that on, and it was a lot of fun.
Y'all became a complete team in terms of just over-the-top passing, running with Ezekiel Elliott right on down the line. What bothers you about this team, like I'm talking about the current team, is the fact, like you talked about earlier, you got to have that running game, right, eventually. I mean, do you see the potential there for this 2024 team to have a running game that it could count on?
Yeah, I mean, listen, like, you look at the guys we have up front, right? I mean, it should be an out. Again, injury, right, prone. I mean, I think it's tough, right, with some of those injuries that happen. But, you know, talking about next man up, like, there's some guys in there, right, that are going to have to step up. I think that's also the opportunity is, like, the O-line's not going to look like it has all year. So I think that's really the challenge is, and the challenge to whoever is the one, right, and how they reshuffle the line and what they come up with, right, against Penn State is what's the dynamic, what's the identity of that offensive line going to be? I mean, there's no doubt that the talent's not there on the line. There's no doubt that the talent's not there in the backfield. I mean, the best backfield, right, and running backs in the entire country. So I would say the answer is yes, but I think the mindset has to change, right, and those guys wanting to just be aggressive, physical, and just go take control of the game.
Yeah.
I think, like I said, McLaughlin's been really high on him. I mean, I love the way he plays football, right? So we have the leader, in my mind, there with Seth, and just got to take control of it, and let's go see it. I mean, the challenge is going to continue to be there, right? And I do think that is, that's going to be the difference in this team, right? Are we going to win championships, or can we run the ball consistently? If we can do that, I think, this team has a real good chance to make a run. And if we can't, I think it's going to be a challenge.
The irony between y'all, 14 and 24, is they're going to Penn State. It's not a whiteout-the-night situation, but it's going to be frenzied over there.
Yep.
You guys, I thought that was the victory that put y'all over the top of the roller coaster, meaning, y'all needed that one.
Yep.
It was hard-fought. It was overtime, shove sack by Joey Bosa at the end of the game. But y'all made the plays on offense when you needed them with JT and stuff. I think this team is facing the same, one loss.
Yep.
You guys had one loss. I think this team is facing the same kind of challenge this week to show itself, right? I mean, do you get that sense too?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think, top five matchup as well, in Happy Valley.
3-4.
I think, and Penn State consistently has a really dominant, right, front seven and a good line. So, I think this is going to be a game where it's going to be one in the trenches, I mean, that's just the way it is when we line up against Penn State. And again, I think it's going to be a challenge. Now, optimistically, I was hoping to see that on Nebraska, is how do we respond against that Oregon loss? I think Nebraska was another wake-up call, So at some point, it's going to be this team's going to flip a switch, right, and just start getting a little bit of crap to them, right? And they're going to pick it up, and they're gonna stop, right, talking about it, and they're going to start doing it, right, and just really overcoming some of the obstacles that they face. And there's no better week than Penn State this week, so I'm definitely looking forward to seeing how the team responds right after Oregon, Nebraska. Optimistic and hope they come out strong, right, and dominate. And specifically, I want to see them do it right on the offense and defensive line in that play.
I was going to say, hey, I'm going to jump real quick because time is limited always, especially with a successful business that you and your brothers are running. I wanted to jump immediately to that, actually. Why did you three brothers decide to go into business together? I had three brothers myself. You three, you've got two brothers, but and a sister, right?
Yep.
Why did y'all decide this was the way to go? And are you surprised you're sitting here right now? This business, Boren Brothers, seems to be expanding every time I look around and stuff.
Yeah. I'd say we're really, really fortunate, right, to have an upbringing of a family that, my dad was an entrepreneur, right? My mom helped at a young age. And so, long story short, I mean, the answer is no. I mean, it's something that we always knew we wanted to do. I should say Justin and I always knew we wanted to do. From a young age, I mean, we have a commercial landscape and snow business as well. It was formerly Grass Groomers and now Yellowstone Landscape that we partnered with. And so we're doing that when we were legitimately four or five 5 years old, right? I was out shoveling snow with my dad, Justin as well. And so always been really passionate about the service business. And obviously we now have the waste business, you know, in addition to that. And so I think it's just natural for us. You know, I mean, I think a lot of times when you look at football, I mean, we've obviously very fortunate, all of us, to have great careers. But football's not forever, right? And so you got to do something afterwards. And business is one of those things, and specifically in the service business for us, are one of those things that we can really channel, right? And I say there's a lot of similarities to a football team and running a football team as running a service-based business. You know, I mean, we have a lot of great men and women on the front line, right, that are the players, right? And they're driving our business every single day, and we have coaches that are helping support them and lead them, you know? And so, you know, the answer is undoubtedly no. I mean, it's something that I think always worked out. I mean, I'll joke with Zach. I mean, he was always the one that was playing sports. So it'd be a snowstorm. He'd be at home with my mom drinking hot chocolate and everything else, you know, and there. And
the pretty boy.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So he had to be guided a little bit down the road on the business side. But again, I think what Zach saw and realized is Zach was so passionate about the sports side. He felt that, you know, the connection, right? Of, oh, I can get the same feeling, right? And, and value out of running a business as I did playing football. So yeah, no, definitely a lot of fun. And, you know, I don't know how many people know. I mean, I was literally the Oregon game, national championship. I mean, I was messed up, right? Two high ankle sprains and torn labrum after that game. I probably should have been recovering. And I was out plowing snow the week of the Oregon game, right, in the national championship. So always been ingrained, something I want to do. And like I said, for me specifically, I mean, it was after Notre Dame. I mean, I didn't even have any other second thought. I mean, I knew without a doubt that I wanted to run the business side and something that I know I can do for the rest of my life.
Yeah. I want to ask you this: is NIL good or bad? I mean, I've always thought you guys, college football players, should share the largesse. You know what I mean? Now they're finally getting around to revenue sharing, starting maybe next year. We'll see how that goes. But like, what always impressed me about you guys is y'all seem to have a plan coming. You know, after football was over, you brothers did. You know, in one form or fashion, right? Yep. Is NIL taking that little edge away from you think college football where so much is given already, you know what I mean, before? Yep. I don't even know what's fair in that realm. What do you think is fair?
Yeah, I mean, so listen, like, I would say when all this was coming around, like, I think NIL is good for college football. I think what the idea of NIL originally was. Yeah. I think what NIL has become has become a problem, right? So I think instead of... You know, I always go to guys like JT Barrett, right? JT Barrett had a seven-figure value at Ohio State, right? Like, high-character guy, great leader, did things the right way. You know, he should have been a seven-figure guy because he earned it, you know? You know, again, high character, high performance on the field, and he built a brand that people respected and knew.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's where I think NIL should exist, right, and belongs in. You know, but I think where we're at today is, you know, there's a miss, right? And I hope they can bring it back, you know, because I think what we're breeding is a sense of entitlement, right? Of like something's owed to these players, right? Just because they're playing football versus, hey, I have to go earn my worth, right? And go earn the money, right? Whatever it may be. And I think that's what's missing. And unfortunately, right? I think it's the system that's broken, right? I mean, these are 18-year-old kids. Right, a lot of them, like, we're doing it to them, right? It's not the kids, right? I mean, it's us that is saying, hey, 18-year-old, you know what? You haven't played a down, but you're probably worth a couple $100,000. Like, you know, so I think it's a system issue, right? And I'm optimistic, and I hope they can get it figured out because right now I don't think it helps college football. Right? I don't think it's good for college football, but optimistic and hope that in the years to come they can get it to where it's, you know, not breeding that entitlement, right, and really making guys earn their worth. And if they do high character, right, do things the right way, right, respectful off the field and dominate on the field, great, right? Go earn your money, and you deserve to get paid.
Last question. Where does toughness come from, especially around the Bourne brothers? That sounds like a commercial also. Y'all should throw in part of you taking out the trash part. Tough, too. You're a guy, you're Ohio State. Let's face it, you had to prove yourself at Ohio State to your head coach. You know what I mean?
Yep.
You were a little bit small in his mind to play offensive line and play center. Explain the drive you had to prove, I don't know if it's to prove people wrong, you just want to play football, right?
Yeah.
But explain how that just enhanced your drive, and Do you look back on it with fond memories in terms of some people doubting mm-hmm. you?
Yep.
And there you were. You end up being the linchpin on the offensive line of a national championship team.
Yep. Yeah, you know, so, you know, for what it's worth, right, in fairness, I mean, I don't think 6'1" and 285, 290 pounds, right, is the epitome of a, you know, Division I national championship center. You know, so, I mean, listen, like, some of that was warranted, you know. You know, I think at the end of the day, you know, I think it is, right, that drive and that competition. You know, I think for me growing up, like, that was just the way I was raised, right? Like, yeah. My parents ingrained it in us, right? Like, you're either going to get better, right? You're going to win, or you lose, yeah. right? And so I was very fortunate to have that with two older brothers, right, who were very competitive, right, and parents that were very competitive, and kind of embodied that, right, throughout my life, and was put in a lot of great situations, right, at a young age from a sports and team aspect to drive that spirit. But no, I mean, I think, you know, at the end of the day, it's just fun, right? I mean, I think even, again, now channel back to the business side, like, I think it's a fun challenge, right, going toe-to-toe with somebody, looking them straight online. It's a little bit different, right, in the business side. Than it is football, where you're lining up, you know, nose to nose to somebody.
Yeah.
You know, but I think it's something to be said, right, with just winning, right, and having that mentality, that drive to succeed. And, you know, for me personally, I mean, maybe the coaches, right, were smart and they kind of knew where I was at. But, yeah, I mean, when you told me, hey, no, you can't do it, I mean, it was definitely challenging me and maybe a little bit spiteful to kind of say, like, no, screw you, like, I'm going to show you I can do it, right? And it doesn't really matter, right, whether it's size, you know, short of size, right, strength, speed, whatever it may be. You know, but I think that's life, right? Like, everybody has a genetic potential, right, with where you're at. And some of that might be mentally, physically, right? Yeah. Whatever it is, it's, you know, what do you do with the, you know, with the gifts that you have to maximize, right, your ability to have an impact in life, in sports, whatever it may be that you're passionate about.
Jacoby Boren, thanks for jumping on the Tim May Show, my man. It's been a long time coming. I was very much looking forward to it, and now people know why.
Yeah, appreciate your time, Tim. It's always great seeing you and catching up.
Well, I appreciate Jacoby joining me, man, trying to put that together. It took us a little while because he and his brothers have a going concern with that Boren waste management is what I call it. I mean, they parlayed, didn't they, Matt?
They did. They did. They took their father's success. And all three of those boys learned from him and turned it into multiple successful businesses.
Absolutely. Considering their father went to Michigan and was one of Bo Schembechler's favorite players of all time, that just tells you how much that team, that family team swung, right?
Absolutely. And also just goes to show, I'll say, what the 2010s of Ohio State football represented, to not have all those boys be in maize and blue, but yet all come wear the scarlet and gray.
Yeah, sometimes people see the light, sometimes they don't.
That's right.
But, you know, getting back to, you know, when I was giving you the DEFCON thing, you know, what would you do more? Let's get to the run defense. Run defense from a DEFCON 1 to 5, 1 meaning you're feeling good about it, DEFCON 5, you know, man the defenses, so to speak. How do you feel about the run defense at this moment?
I feel pretty good about, I'm going to go DEFCON 1. I can't necessarily say that, you know, any opponents, I know that, you know, Oregon ran for over 100 yards for the first time. It felt like yesterday, last week against Nebraska that, you know,
it's
they
not
buckled
even yesterday.
Down.
We're just, those are Freudians. Those are called Freudians. Go ahead.
they buckled down. They played well. The one thing that I know is a thing, and this is also an NFL thing that Ohio State seems to do, is we have our run stopping group. And we have our pass rushing group, right?
Yeah.
And we'll get to, you know, pass rush here, I'm sure, in a minute, you know, yeah. From a DEFCON standpoint. So I'm going to go with one. But, like, I just think, you know, Ty Leak and Ty Hamilton, when they're in there, they're dogs. They're yes. They're physical. They're hard to block. They're extremely disruptive, which, as a former linebacker, regardless of, you know, what scheme you're playing in, if you have disruptive defensive tackles, your Mike linebacker in most cases should be making a lot of tackles, which, you know, Cody Simon does and makes a lot of plays, showing up at or around the line of scrimmage, very aggressive, very angry, and getting guys to the ground.
Yeah, and real quick, I mean, I'm standing on the field for the last Nebraska's last possession. I'm literally on the Nebraska side, you know, but I'm literally like, you know, 20 yards, 25 yards away from the action. I want to tell you the ferocity I saw in Ohio State's defense. Because a game was still in the balance. Are we kidding me? You know, we're talking about a 21-17 lead. The game was still in the balance, and the ferocity that JT Tuimoloau and Ty Hamilton and those guys brought from a defensive line standpoint, and then Cody Simon, in my opinion, his finest hour so far. I mean, he had that great tackle on the goal line, on that great goal line stand they had earlier in the game.
Yes.
Dude, that's two goal line stands in two games. That's pretty remarkable. But he had a great play from the really sort of the semi-backside, but then he made two tackles on screens, quick screens, you know, just threw the guy to the ground. I mean, it was, you know, and I kept the screen game as part of the run game. I don't know if you do or not.
Sure.
But the bottom line is it was really cool to sit there and watch that happen. And then Dylan Raiola was kind of discombobulated on his last pass and throws it right to Jordan Hancock because he and the receiver weren't on the same page. And Jordan Hancock catches the ball and game over. But the bottom line, I was impressed by the ferocity there. Now, I think most people are, even me, I'm sitting there going, from a pass defense standpoint, which always starts with the pass rush, right? Always.
Absolutely.
Why isn't it like that on pass rush plays? I mean, and I know why, because number one, you got a quarterback that can run. Matter of fact, Dylan Raiola kept him in the game early by running.
Yeah.
So you can't just like tee off on guys like you do in the NFL, because a guy like Patrick Mahomes makes you pay for that. You know what I mean?
He does.
A guy like Dylan Raiola. Now, this Pribula guy, they may be going against Penn State's backup quarterback, as we all saw on Saturday night, has the wheels to kind of make some things happen and stuff. But explain why, in your mind, maybe the pass rush hadn't been there, and is there some blame to go there?
I'm not necessarily one to again, we place blame. We can place blame and be negative, you know, as much as we want on all the little quirks within a
football. These guys are pro football players now.
Correct. Yes. the one thing that I will state, and again, I'm going to go with from a pass rush and a pass defense DEFCON. I'm going to put them on DEFCON too.
Okay.
Just because they have not, like, they're good and kind of, I think they're still a work in progress. And the reason why I say that is, you know, early in that football game, even with Raiola escaping, you could see Jim Knowles' dedicated effort to be four down and stunt in game, you know, loopers, kind of creating lanes, creating, you know, which, you know, Nebraska picked up and Raiola just took off and ran in situations. You also saw, you know, Cody Simon, like 2 yards mugged right over the center, stunts in games. And then he's kind of like a spy. Eventually Dylan Raiola still, you know, got some yards when they picked that up and there was patience. But when a defense gets really good and when these guys go from DEFCON 2 to DEFCON 1 and they're good or they're solid, it you marry up the cover, you know, the coverage being tight and we, you know, we call it, it's like coach speech, like you cover long. You got to cover a long time. And I would say the same for the front end. The front end, you know, with the offensive lines that we're seeing, you know, because of in some cases the transfer portal, there is no weak link, you know, team who's starting a redshirt freshman and, you know, playing for his first time. You're getting any holes they have, they're going to get guys with size, with great feet, with great punch that have 20 starts under their belt.
Yeah.
And they're filling in those holes to protect this young quarterback and be able to deliver the football to these skillful players. So they're able to pick up some of these stunts. But the one thing I think has been missing, and it's, again, it's not against any one individual, but, you know, to kind of single out, you know, JTT and Sawyer, it's like, we've been so spoiled with the Bosa boys and, you know, with Chase Young and the defensive ends we've had, and, you know, in the past to just like win on the edge in one-on-one against the tackle, you know, or even maybe a chipping, you know, tight end or running back and deliver the sacks, deliver the pressure, deliver the rush, you know, the QB hurry that forces a high throw, a throw into the ground and, you know, a bad throw that becomes an interception, whatever it may be. Not only that consistently, but that in big moments.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what we're missing. And I think Jim Knowles is kind of he's going to keep digging in and manufacturing and thinking up and drawing up based on, you know, where the quarterback likes to escape. Where does he like to throw from? Where does it, that's the one thing also from a study standpoint, like where is a quarterback as you break them down throughout the week, where is he most efficient? He's most efficient at this spot or stepping up and to the right, stepping up and to the left. And then what you do is you build a plan to force him anywhere but that spot. So his efficiency plummets.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're kind of like in the middle of right now. And I think that, and again, I don't know it. You'll probably know better than me because you're down in the area, but like the little bit of, and I don't want to say tension, but like the Larry Johnson way of doing things and the Jim Knowles way of doing things might not have been completely collaborative early in the season. But we're seeing, you know, a combination of those four-man and now five-man rushes. And I think it's also worth pointing out that all three sacks we delivered against Nebraska came with a fifth man adding to the rush in some capacity, which does cause confusions, puts someone more in a one-on-one situation. And I think, what, Ty Leak, Ty Hamilton, and JTT all delivered sacks in their own right.
Yeah, exactly. Give them a conundrum is what I like to say. I mean, meaning give them something, give the offensive line something to deal with and think about. And then, but you got to cover your bases too, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, you can't let a quarterback just keep running the ball for these 8, 10, 12 yard
games. Honestly, as a defensive player, it is, yeah, it is the most defeating thing,
yeah,
in the world when you do cover long. And you take away their great playmakers down the football field, whether it's a tight end or, you know, three wide receivers or four wide receivers, and you cover them up, and that quarterback squirts out somewhere and gets just enough to, again, hey, he gets just enough to get, yeah, the first down, which is defeating, and he gets either out of bounds or slides, so you can't even hit him,
right?
You know, to deliver that blow to the quarterback, you know, as that untouchable, you know, unicorn in today's football. So it's a double negative. And it's exhausting, you know. And I think what we're seeing with our inability, it's like that yin and yang from a football standpoint is like with our inability to run the football and own the, and I know we may have had the football more than Nebraska. I didn't check that stat, but our inability to run the football consistently and bleed the game and bludgeon the defense and then pick them apart in the pass game with Will Howard and our weapons, you know, in the wide receiver room, you're forcing the defense to have to bow up, which I had no problem with, especially in 2002. That's just what it was, right? It was Clarett, yeah, and Krenzel. You know what I mean? Krenzel, you know, being judicious in the pass game, and Clarett and Lydell Ross just, you know, running the football on the ground. And yeah, it's how we were going to win football games. And that's the one thing that, you know, maybe games like this past week are going to, again, wouldn't be surprised going to Happy Valley that if it's going to be very, it's not going to be, it could be, could it be 35-34, 35-31? Sure. My money is that it's going to be, you know, in the 20s, you know, and there's not going to be a lot of big plays, and it's going to be a little bit more strategic by both sides.
Yeah. Plus, even for the fans, it's going to be tough because there's a presidential candidate, at least one showing up, which means, talk about DEFCON 5. You know, you may get in line at 7:30 and get to your seat about fourth quarter, but I digress. Real quick, I want your bailiwick, linebacker play in particular. Have you been impressed, or what impressed may not be the right word, because Arvell Reese obviously got that targeting call against him on that same possession, the last possession. That was a strange possession. Where are you with linebacker play at this moment, heading into at this juncture, is the biggest game of the year so far?
Sure. I'm going to also be around DEFCON 1.5 for them. Is there cause for slight concern? Sure. I think, you know, what that is, truthfully, and it's, and again, he doesn't call the plays, is I thought Sonny Styles would be making more splash plays. Honestly, does he make one a game? Yeah. You know, but for a player who's kind of like, you know, in his third year, has gone from, you know, safety to kind of walk out kind of hybrid nickel to now, you know, a full-time linebacker. Yeah. And here's the other thing I'll say. He's out in space where he should be able to be as good of an athlete as he's covering, unless it's like a five-star, four-star receiver. You know, it's tight ends. It's running backs. It's, you know, being slippery and unblockable in run game fits against, you know, big, heavy set guys. I thought that was going to be a little bit more of an advantage. And I also thought, and this is where I said he doesn't control the play call, is I actually thought he'd be much more of a chess piece defensively, where Jim Knowles would like tinker with him and move him around, you know, mugging him, walking him on the edge, you know,
yeah,
you know, starting him high, walking down low, and then running, you know, running to trap coverage and, you know, maybe, you know, getting under a dig or getting under a comeback of some sort. I just thought he'd be a bigger chess piece, as much of an athlete that he is. But in some cases, that might go against his scheme. And the other thing I would also say is, like, maybe he's just like, and I'm not discounting anything, but like maybe he just can't handle that, you know, from a mental, like the, all like being moved around and not just being able to play. He's the weak side linebacker. I'm going to line up to the weak side when we make a front call, right?
Yeah.
And just having to like move around and monkey around. He might just be a player that goes, yeah, I'd like to kind of be in or around where I'm going to end up and play coverage or, you know, have to fit and not be moving around. That's also a thing.
Yeah. Be there for the cutback, you know? that's interesting because I don't know why. I just think there's more things coming from Jim Knowles this week. I mean, I've just got a sense there is going to be because you got to change things up a little bit. You know, you clearly want to play some things that have been effective against Penn State, like Wisconsin in the first half had a pretty good game, but boy, didn't adjust well when Allar had to leave the game and that Primula guy came on.
That's
key.
That's a massive key.
Yeah. You saw Texas A&M do the same thing, you know?
Correct. Massive key that now you have a half of football to study. And I think so the way in which the game would look with Drew Allar, that's the big, talk about a conundrum is not knowing who's playing actually works against Ohio State.
Yeah.
Because we have to spend 50% of our time, you know, preparing for Drew Allar, which is a much more balanced run pass, you know, down the field pro style passing game in Penn State's, you know, terms of offensive scheme. And then you flip it to, so much more conservative. You saw, I mean, and I watched most of the Penn State, you know, some of the shovel passes, some of the underneath stuff to 44, some of the, you know, again, 44 takes a snap, you know, to get a first down and fourth and one so that the new quarterback doesn't have to, you know, all these little, you know, intricate layers that you now have to, you know, turn over, study, get your guys ready for. And then also you show up or whenever they designate, you know, who's, I call it inactive or active, whether he's playing or not. Probably is going to come down to like early game, like warmups. Is you have to erase 50% of what you learned this week and maximize the 50% that you prepared for the other guy, whatever that might be, and then go out and do it.
When we were little boys growing up, the 4MA boys and everybody else, of course, having four football players, you know, so to speak, on a Saturday morning, you know, when we were in Lufkin, Texas, trying to get up a game with somebody. Obviously, everybody ended up at our house, you know. And my favorite times was when we were playing basically goal line defense against each other. I mean, you know what I mean? Where you'd line up and there'd be six guys on this side and six guys on that side, and you had to go 10 yards to score a touchdown. You knew where everything was. You knew what had to happen. Now it was, hey, Tim, quit crying and get in there and hit somebody, you know what I mean, type thing.
I do.
You know, my big brother Ben, he pulled no punches. But it's so different now. Times a million on what players have to have in their brain, but you can't get away from the basic stuff. And Penn State's going to run some base stuff at you also to test your virility or whatever term you want to call it.
Even more so with the backup quarterback.
Yes.
You know,
so
they're going to test you. They're going to test your physicality. They're going to test, can you stop the run? Cause the Singleton kid is a great runner.
Yes.
He's a tough player. You know, the way that they use 44, and his name escapes me right now.
Yeah, me too.
He's one of the top tight ends in the country. The way they use him as a chess piece, you know, why on, why flex, why off, you know, he comes and smacks in the run game. He boots the next play. You know, there's just a lot of, it's a very pro style. Again, I said pro style. It's a very pro style offense. The way they use 44 is very similar, not to the capacity that the Chiefs use Travis Kelce, you know. Yeah. He's a great athlete. You got to get him the football. And I think it takes a lot of pressure off of either the young quarterback or even Drew Allar to have to drop back 35, 40 times against a very good defense and have to deliver the football down the field.
Hey, you know, when they lined up side by side there in the second half, one play in particular, and they snapped it, I think they snapped it to 44 instead of Pribula. Put me in your eyes, because you were on the other side of the line there for so many years. What are you telling yourself because you've got enough of an angle to see that that 44 is lined up behind, I think it was 44, is lined up behind the center. I mean, you know, in a pistol depth.
Yeah.
So what are you seeing? What are you telling yourself, and what are you screaming to everybody else?
Well, first of all, the plays that they can run are probably power or counter or some type of lead, right? You know, lead insert or some type of ISO. We should know that. And what it also gives off, which you've everyone's prepared for in some capacity in the new age of football since what Gus Malzahn was at Auburn with Cam Newton, is you like the wildcat triggers your brain. You know, because again, because Wildcat is limited, what, and not anymore, not so much anymore, but was limited to power counter, quarterback ISO, you know, some type of, you know, or insert. Now there's, if you, and this is the other layer that you bake in, can you run some type of power read or zone read, you know, with 44 where you create a little, you know, guessing by, you know, especially it slows down JTT and Jack Sawyer on the edges to have to play run or the jet motion.
Yeah.
You know, then you get the puller with the kick out or turns up in on the backer, and all, you know, you got, now you don't have a 185-pound, you know, 6'1" quarterback running downhill. You've got a 6'3", 250-pound tight end carrying the football running downhill on you. And in short yardage situations, I'm sure Penn State's going to expound, you know, that if they feel comfortable with it and him catching the shotgun snap and handling the ball appropriately, they're going to expound on that and force Ohio State to, again, to defend the layers within that scheme.
Yeah. It more than anything else is the mindset when that's presented to you as a possibility. Is it just everybody play your responsibility? Don't chase. Obviously it sounds easy, but they've got guys blocking too. You know what I mean?
Yes. The mentality. So the one other layer that it's like having the quarterback run the football, which is, we know as Ohio State fans with JT Barrett, gosh, we did that for 4 years with Urban Meyer here. It adds a gap that you have to defend because now the running back has to be accounted for either. Gosh, if he's flexed out, you got to have a body over there, right? Because they could throw it. Can they? Sure. Will they? Probably not. So then you add him as a blocker and it creates one more gap for you to defend, which means you have to bring one more hat to the party. So that is a strategy, you know, that they can use. But to your point, you should be ready for it. You should be ready for, they're only going to have like an A and a B and a C, you know, and potentially like a gadget or a trick play off of it to try to catch you. Once they run A and B, you know, they're going to throw a Z at you, which is a double reverse pass, flea flicker,
to
test your eye discipline. And to your point about backyard football, down inside the goal line, down inside the 10-yard line, and you watch football every week when the football gets down there, the creativity, because it is confined space, the creativity by these offensive coaches and the players' ability to go out and execute is really a test of discipline within the defense of, am I playing my technique and my gap or responsibility? And more so than anything, it's your eye discipline. They want to show something in your face while there's a, you know, something running around you behind you. And all it is, the accuracy of quarterbacks is up. The athletic ability of the wide receivers is at all time high level with, you know, the back shoulder throws, the back corner fades, and these guys toe tapping for touchdowns is like nothing we've ever seen before.
Yeah. Hey, just two quickies before we're done. Number one, as a linebacker, for example, when you were in the middle, did you become aware of when an offensive lineman is not trying to get downfield, as opposed to on some plays immediately he's trying to get downfield, trying to get to the second level, which tells you it's a run play, not a pass play, because they watch the ineligible receivers downfield really tightly now.
Yeah.
I mean, can you process all of that as in, hey, I'm here and they're running, I'm seeing this, but, you know, this looks like a pass based on how these guys in front of me, you know, like I'm seeing in my peripheral vision are playing. Can you make yourself aware of all of that?
It's very tough. It's the reason why the teams that run RPO efficiently are so dangerous. And the reason why I say that is because, you know, as a linebacker, you're getting a run read from all your keys, which means low hats. Offensive linemen are drive blocking, 1-1000, 2-1000. And so you have to run fit as if the quarterback can give the football. And then next thing you know, it's like, and the ball just gets whizzed, you know, to a slant by number two outside. You know, and that's where, like, again, I keep saying it, it's, you know, but it's like, it's the immense key to defense is eye discipline. If you're looking at the right things, there's a really high chance that your body does the right thing. You know, if you're banking on your body doing the right thing and you've got bad eyes looking at the wrong thing, you're going to do the wrong thing more often than not. So it is. So, you're reading high hat, low hat, you know, back when I played, shoot, you're reading the triangle, you know, guard, you know, guard, fullback, guard, but there really are no football fullbacks anymore. So it's high hat, low hat. But then that's why I also see, to your point about ineligible men downfield, is like when you have great eye discipline by the backers and secondary and they close those slant windows or that RPO window, you see a quarterback hold the football,
yeah,
you know, not give, hold it, and hold it, and hold it, and hold it. And by then, you know, you got linemen drive blocking, you know, 8 yards downfield, and it's a penalty on them.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, last thing I wanted to ask you, landmarks. You know, I love that term, but I've always been intrigued by offenses looking for landmarks in the defensive, you know, where you go here to go there and stuff like that. Man, I swear, it looked like the plan, and I wanted to ask you this, having played so many games, because I do believe this is used quite frequently. I thought it got used by Nebraska on Saturday, is using the umpire in the middle of the defense to basically pick. Yeah, Caleb Downs got picked by the umpire, for example, on Saturday. He had interaction with the umpire several times, you know, like when he was rolling up instead of like staying back, and they had another guy on the backside, which I thought they did a good job for the most part of keeping a guy on the backside and not getting burned too badly in that regard. But did you see that as part and parcel to an offense sometimes of using that umpire to pick you or to pick a defender?
In my career, I probably run into him one time, you know, when I'm like, maybe in mine again, it wasn't like a wide receiver cross. It was like a tight end cross.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, where he's standing right there and picks you, and there goes your coverage. It is absolutely to make it a fact, it is absolutely used by offenses, on any type of mesh, you know, crossing concept where you're already in chase mode, you know. And in many cases, you'll see, you know, the sit down and then the crosser go, and it's basically meant to impede the chaser, you know, from staying on the hip of the receiver. But in that case, it is, I mean, you're adding another, like, it can't be a pass interference call, yeah, right? Because yeah, it's the referee. You're adding another call. It's a pillar or right in the middle of the field that if you want to use is available to use strategically.
Yeah. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's Matt Wilhelm, and summing it up as usual with quite aplomb. Matt Wilhelm, thank you once again for joining the Tim May Show as the able-bodied co-pilot who does most of the flying while I enjoy. Yes, we still give out peanuts on Tim May Airlines. Hey, man, this is going to be interesting coming back next week.
It is.
Talk about what we see, what we don't see, whether Ohio State makes that step, whether the offensive line. I think this is it's kind of a referendum game, I think, for Justin Fry and that offensive line. Justin Fry, the offensive line coach, and that offensive line. I don't know if you agree or not, but
I think not only that. I hate to say it, but like, and I know that there are still so many games to play, right, of importance. Yeah. But like, you can't say if you potentially lose this football game that all your goals are still attainable, because you do not control your own destiny at this point anymore. Right. And in some cases, you don't right now.
Yeah.
You don't right now. I mean, you don't right now. You wouldn't, because Penn State would maintain, you know, would be undefeated. If they were to lose down the stretch, they'd own the head to head, you know. Yeah. So this is, I mean, critical. You say Justin Fry. I mean, I think this is like, does a two loss football team end up in the Big Ten championship game? I don't know. And so you don't even have that opportunity to, you know, earn that bye in the 12 team college football playoff. And I think, you know, and lastly, it's not that I don't think, as long as all goes well, you know, beyond this, like, but like Indiana's tough, still on our schedule, you know, that team up north, regardless of what they're doing and what we're doing, like, it's still going to be a game, you know. Yeah. We're still going to have to go do it and win it, you know? So it's very interesting to see, but like, you know, you also undo a lot of these warts that we're talking about, a one-loss Ohio State football team, if you go up to Happy Valley and win this game. And I think, you know, rightfully so, you could probably, you know, immediately jump to number two in the polls behind, you know, the Oregon team that we lost to just by a point.
I agree. Ladies and gentlemen, what you're looking for is the W anymore. Who cares what the spread says? Who cares what the final spread is? You're looking for the W. And, of course, every midweek, you're looking for the W, as in Wilhelm, here on the Tim May Show. Matt, once again, thanks for joining me, my man.
My pleasure, Tim. Thank you.
And until next week, ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you then.